Welcome to 17 Minutes, a BoJack Horseman podcast. My name is Kat, and this is the series where we do a deep dive into BoJack Horseman and find hidden gags, metaphors, and deeper meanings in the show. First, I'd like to thank my host and sponsor, Anchor. A general content warning, there will be spoilers for BoJack Horseman in this series. I treat this podcast with the assumption that my audience has seen the entire show. So if you're a first-time watcher, I highly recommend that you back out now and come back when you finish the series. Don't worry, I'll still be here when you're ready. I also want to note that I'm rewatching this with you. Occasionally, there will be a gag or a bit of foreshadowing I'll miss, so if there's something I don't mention in one episode that's pertinent in a future one, don't worry, I'll get there. We're on this ride together. In future episodes of this podcast, I might also have segments on further thoughts that I may have missed in previous ones, or particularly good comments and insights that my followers have that I may not have thought about before, with proper credit, of course. We're also on the ride of this being my first podcast together, so from the bottom of my heart, I really and truly appreciate all your support. TikTok will remain the place for my more random thoughts about the show, and this will go through and explore each episode in chronological order. I will still make time for a segment on audience questions, though, so please feel free to send me some on TikTok or Twitter. My handle on both of those platforms is KerseyCat. That's KerseyCat. So, without further ado, what do I know? Do I know things? Let's find out. So much love and work was put into this show, and so many things that happen are very specific and intentional choices, though, as Bob Waxberg has said, several of them are just serendipity. I believe that even the serendipitous moments have an unintentional, deeper meaning, so I'm going to treat each moment as though it contributes deeply to the show. All of the following analyses and interpretations are simply those, analysis and interpretation. I will be abundantly clear when I list confirmed facts from Bob Waxberg and the team, read direct quotes, or use outside sources that provide information that isn't just from my own brain. I'm currently in the process of figuring out how to set up a blog or a website, and you'll be able to find transcripts there as well as citations for all of my sources, and I'll let y'all know once it's live. In a 2017 interview with Australian broadcasting company SBS, which I will be referencing quite a lot in this podcast episode, Raphael Bob Waxberg said, quote, I think in some ways it is intentional and commentary. In other ways, it is intentional and a feature of the design of writing a comedy show. You want your ensemble of characters and excuses for them all to be in a room together. And I think in some ways it's accidental. I allow the critical community to draw their own conclusions on what is intentional subversion and what is unintentional hack work, end quote. Raphael. Can I call you Raphael? I hope that I can do you justice as a part of the critical community you're talking about. He goes on to say in the interview, quote, in the first season, we threw a lot of things into the background, a lot of foreshadowing and callbacks. We assumed some of it would fall through the cracks, but were delighted when the first season came out that literally everything we put in, somebody found. I don't think anybody watches the show and picks up everything, but everything we put in is picked up along the way. That really gave us carte blanche in later seasons to push that farther. End quote. I know that he's completely right that nobody will pick up everything, but sir, I take that as a challenge. That being said, I'm certain I'll miss a few things, but I'll be damned if I won't try. I'm a person who watches a lot of television. Some of my favorite comedies include Arrested Development, Futurama, Archer, Daria, My Name is Earl, and about 6 million other shows. Arrested Development, though, that's my numero uno other than BoJack. It's been my favorite since long before BoJack. In fact, it was the reason I started watching, because Will Arnett, who has the voice of a sex god, was in it. When reading through the initial emails between Raphael Bob Waxberg and Lisa Hannawalt discussing BoJack's character, I was thrilled to see that he referenced both Archer and Daria as minor inspirations for the show. They also both discussed the show Flapjack, which I haven't seen, but I have a feeling that I'll be watching soon to see what all the fuss is about. BoJack Horseman had a unique place as a very early Netflix original, and the interviewer in the SBS article says that it was instrumental in creating some of the structural tricks that we're now familiar with in serialized quote-unquote binge shows, giving the example of jokes that would pay off episodes later. Bob Waxberg gives credit to Arrested Development Season 4 for this, and says that as the series went on, he and the team found that they could push this concept more and more, making jokes that would pay off even seasons later, since it's not like a primetime cable show that you'd watch week to week and risk missing an episode of. I had always thought that there was undoubtedly some Arrested Development inspiration in there, though, simply based on the kind of humor that's in it, and I was glad to have that confirmed. In the SBS interview, he mentions that the highly controversial fourth season of Arrested Development was interesting in that it, quote, wasn't just trying to do the same thing the first three seasons did. It was trying to do something completely different and new. The people who have criticisms about the fourth season, I don't know if it's necessarily tied to how they did things or whether you can't really go home again. I'm curious to see what the new season looks like. I think it'll be exciting and interesting, end quote. As a near rabid fan of Arrested Development myself, I think it's the only show I've seen more than BoJack, and I've lost count of how many times, but I would say it's somewhere between the 30 and 40 range. I've been obsessed with the show since the 2000s. I have a confession to make. Although seasons 1 through 3 are undeniably the best seasons, I actually did quite enjoy 4 and 5. I like to think that I could watch it with Raphael Bob Waxberg, and we'd both laugh a lot. Raphael, if you ever hear this, first off, I am so sorry that you somehow found this and am incredibly embarrassed. But at the same time, if you do hear this, you want to watch some Arrested Development with me sometime? Let me know. It's an open offer. As an aside, I highly recommend y'all check out the book The Art Before the Horse by Chris McDonnell, which is chock full of interviews with Raphael Bob Waxberg and Lisa Hanawalt, and gives a lot of insight into the show that I'll be referencing here quite frequently. It was honestly so hard to not just read the entire book to y'all, but that seems like it's probably copyright infringement, and the art in the book is really what makes it such a beautiful and immersive experience to read. A movie that I noticed that Raphael and Lisa referenced several times in The Art Before the Horse is the 2010 film Greenberg. I adore this movie. It's a Noah Baumbach film with a stellar cast and a fantastic score by James Murphy of LCD Sound System, one of my personal favorite bands. Go see him live if you can. It is really an incredible experience. And after reading about the connection, I could absolutely see the similarities between the titular character played by Ben Stiller and BoJack. Though I want to be careful to say that BoJack is not based on Greenberg, just similar. Here's the Rotten Tomatoes synopsis. Quote, Roger Greenberg, Ben Stiller, a failed musician now making a living as a carpenter in New York, returns to Los Angeles to house sit for his brother, Chris Messina. He is stranded there, since he doesn't drive, until his brother's assistant, Florence, Greta Gerwig, comes to his rescue. She is as much a lost soul as he is, and as the pair begin spending more time together, they form a significant connection, giving Roger a much-needed reason to be happy. It did poorly in the box office and has low audience scores on Rotten Tomatoes, but I do not care. It's a good movie. Please go watch Greenberg. So, let's jump into the first scene of the first episode. Season 1, Episode 1, BoJack Horseman, The BoJack Horseman Story, Chapter 1, begins with an episode of Horsin' Around, clips of which continue to play throughout the episode. By the way, did you know that you can access an entire episode of Horsin' Around on Netflix? It's a Christmas special, but it's a full-length sitcom episode. They got inspiration from Christmas specials from Full House, Alf, and Growing Pains, and Family Ties for it, so it'll give you some great nostalgia if you watch shows like that growing up. The first characters we see are BoJack and Sarah Lynn, albeit as their Horsin' Around characters, the horse and Sabrina. I think this is a profoundly important detail since so much of the show is about the relationship between BoJack and Sarah Lynn, and it only makes sense that they would be the first characters we see interacting on screen together. I also think it's important that the first time we see her is as a little girl, since that's before all the corruption of her innocence really starts to happen. She's still just a young child, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and hasn't seen all the terrible things that the world has thrown at her yet. We know that child stars have a really terrible time in the industry and that it's still terrible, but so many child stars from that era were subject to so many abuses and so few boundaries, which Sarah Lynn absolutely struggles with, and her story is, unfortunately, all too common. By the way, Sarah Lynn is played by one of my favorite comedians, Kristen Schaal. We all love her as Louise in Bob's Burgers, but OGs know that other than Sarah Lynn, one of her greatest roles was as Mel in Flight of the Conchords. That was my first exposure to her. And if you haven't seen it, you need to. Go watch it. Right now. Pause this and come back. Or you can go watch some of her very early, very weird stand-up, especially the stuff with her comedy partner, Kurt Braunohler. It's worth it. We see that the Horse and Around clip was being shown as a promo for an interview with BoJack promoting his book. I think that I always block out that this is a segment on Charlie Rose because, like, yikes. But, you know, it was 2014, and as far as I know, the allegations against him weren't yet public. And he's voiced by Patton Oswalt, not the actual Charlie Rose, so it's not as bad as it could have been, I guess. We find out that Horse and Around premiered in 1987. I think it's easy to draw a comparison between this show and Full House, particularly because, for some reason, there's a rumor floating around that BoJack is actually a horse version of Bob Saget. But Raphael Bob Waksberg has debunked that rumor, stating that BoJack is more of a Hollywood archetype than any specific person. In the SBS interview, he said, quote, "He's not necessarily one guy. He's definitely a conglomerate of a lot of different people that you see. People try and point to Scott Baio, Bob Saget, etc., but he doesn't cleanly fit into any specific person, nor do I want him to. I want him to be his own character. The more we learn about him, the more we discover he's his own character. It gets dangerous when it gets too specific. This guy is an analog for this, and that character is an analog for that. I want it to exist in its own universe and be its own thing," end quote. Similarly to the rumors of Bob Saget being debunked, I think it's reasonable to say that the idea that it's supposed to be Full House is inaccurate too. I see it as more of an amalgamation of every family sitcom of the late 80s and 90s. If you remember that era, for instance, the TGIF lineup, although I'm not sure my younger listeners will be familiar, you'll remember just how many family sitcoms there were in that time frame. Horse and Around is described as broad and saccharine and not good despite continuing to run for 9 seasons, which I think can describe a lot of those shows, quite frankly. In that same interview, Bob Waksberg said that while Full House was a major inspiration, he also cited Different Strokes, Charles in Charge, Who's the Boss, Family Ties, although he said Family Ties may be a little bit too good for Horse and Around, Growing Pains, Step by Step, Punky Brewster. He says the more saccharine, the better. As a personal aside, I love the detail that he added 2 staircases in the horse's house, like so many of those shows had. I remember the feeling of utter luxury that exuded, and as he says in the interview, Horse and Around is in the proud tradition of the trope because it, quote, "boggled his mind because only the richest people have 2 sets of staircases in their homes," end quote. I think a lot of us felt that way watching those shows. One of the first background gags we get to is during the segment, Charlie Rose shows the magazines TV Guru, Person, and 18, obvious parodies of TV Guide, People, and 17, respectively. In Person magazine, BoJack and Jaleel White have an interview together. Jaleel White is, of course, Steve Urkel. There's also a little photo in the top left corner of this one that says, "Sarah Lynn sings," which really shouldn't be as heartbreaking as it is, but for me, it is, because it's the first allusion to Sarah Lynn's music career, which was ultimately a large contributor to her road to addiction and, like many young pop stars of the era, over-sexualization at a young age. Joelle Clark, who plays Olivia on Horse and Around, appears on the cover of 18 magazine, and then we see a CD called Trot This Way, which is ostensibly a Run DMC song featuring BoJack, based on the real-life Run DMC featuring Aerosmith song Walk This Way. It's not explicitly stated that it's Run DMC, but they do look like them, so I think it's safe to assume that that's what this is. We finally see BoJack as BoJack as he appears on Charlie Rose, incredibly drunk and having driven there under the influence. I think it's funny that he appears to be concerned about whether or not he should say handicapped or disabled, but not as much whether he should be parked in a disabled spot. So from the get-go, the first time we see him, not just as the horse, on screen, he's dealing with major substance abuse issues, as well as putting his priorities in a strange place. "Is it me, or am I nailing this interview? I kind of feel like I'm nailing it," he says. We see him wonder the same thing after the crucial Biscuits Braxby interview in the season 6 episode Xerox of a Xerox. He, of course, was not nailing the interview either time. His skewed perception of the world and how others view him is a constant in this series. When Charlie Rose asks about the show, saying it's been described as broad and saccharine and not good, BoJack responds with one of my favorite quotes in the series. "It's not Ibsen, sure, but for a lot of people, life is just one long, hard kick in the urethra, and sometimes when you get home from a long day of getting kicked in the urethra, you just want to watch a show about good, likable people who love each other where, you know, no matter what happens, at the end of 30 minutes, everything's going to turn out okay." I think that's the kicker of this show. It doesn't wrap up neatly in a bow because real life doesn't either. In the SBS interview, the interviewer mentions that the show has a, quote, sitcom structure, and asks how intentional it was to, quote, create a mirror image of the sitcom he's trying to escape from, end quote. We discover that it's been 18 years since Horsin' Around's cancellation. BoJack, being washed up and quite frankly a mediocre actor until he applies himself in Secretariat several seasons later, cannot answer the question of what he's been doing since then. This is a recurring struggle in his life and arguably one of his biggest insecurities that we'll see crop up again and again. We get to the title sequence. A little known fact about this show is that details in the title sequence actually change quite often, but this is the first one. It is rife with foreshadowing if you know where to look. Let's break it down. Although, for just a moment, I'd love to address how Patrick Carney, the composer, absolutely killed it when he wrote this theme. It's a banger. I would listen to it in a club. You can listen to the full version on Spotify. I do regularly. The theme song has this feeling of kind of having a driving beat, but at the same time being pulled back enough to feel a bit stagnant. It's repetitive, but it so perfectly encapsulates how it feels like the world is moving around BoJack, not with him. We open at nighttime and lapse into the day on BoJack's house on the side of the cliff, overlooking what is still Hollywood at this time. Does his pool scare the shit out of anyone else? I wouldn't trust it, but I'm also not fabulously wealthy and have never been in a pool that's that high off the ground. BoJack wakes up and we get the sort of stop-motion-y time-lapse sequence as he floats through his life, always facing us, the audience, and the camera, rather than his own life, which is happening behind him. BoJack is always trying to face the audience and the camera, even in his own life. He wants to get away from his life and lets it happen behind him and around him in favor of the audience and of the camera and of the fame. We see BoJack's closet, which has several outfits hanging in it, which doesn't have much meaning, but I do think is funny because BoJack and most of the other main characters follow the cartoon trope of having only one outfit for the most part. We see that he has framed magazines from the 90s about Horsin' Around, one of which is literally called 90s Magazine and has the headline, "BoJack Horseman, I love being famous." As he moves through the house, we see that Todd is sitting on the couch, his belongings and various munchies strewn about, watching Horsin' Around on the television. Diane is on the deck smoking a cigarette, which is where she and BoJack actually meet for the first time. It still says Hollywood in the background. Todd goes to make himself more food, and we see Princess Carolyn in the kitchen making breakfast on the stove while she talks on her Bluetooth. Then he's at the grocery store where we see Princess Carolyn still talking on her Bluetooth device, a bear shopping in the background, Todd clumsily toppling a display of some apples, I think, and Peanut Butter and Diane shopping while they stare at their phones. We get to the paparazzi, who are a pig and two birds that we'll see again throughout the series. Interestingly, most of the actors were made to record separately from each other, but the two birds are close friends who play off of each other really well, and they got to record together. BoJack goes from drinking coffee to a smoothie to whiskey as we enter the party scene. There are several various animals and celebrity cameos in the background. We see Lenny Turtletaub, played by award-winning actor J.K. Simmons, for the first time. It's unclear what kind of party this is, as BoJack is in a tux and everyone else seems to be pretty casual. Sarah Lynn can be seen talking to a chihuahua as one of her music videos plays on the screen behind her. Then, BoJack is clearly intoxicated, the partygoers increasingly so, and he goes over the railing on the deck, only to land in the pool, which we'll discuss more in a moment. Obviously, this is a major foreshadowing, considering the events and the view from halfway down, but, like in Halfway Down, he comes out alright and doesn't actually drown. Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter, as well as a faceless crowd, look down on him in concern as a helicopter flies over and the bubbles of his breath rise to the surface. Then we transition to BoJack just being on a pool float on top of the water, seemingly unaffected by anything. We end back on an outside shot of the house at nighttime. In these early episodes, we hear BoJack make horse noises more often, which I don't think has much symbolism beyond a natural progression in the show that, as the topics get deeper, it becomes a little awkward to have him chuffing and neighing all the time. But he does retain other horse behaviors throughout the series, particularly with his ears. You can occasionally see them move in the way that a horse's would when he's upset. In the pitch treatment that included concept art, Hannawalt did some sketches of various faces, including ear positioning, for various emotions. She worked with horses her entire life and was intimately familiar with their mood indicators. This is the kind of attention to detail I really appreciate in this show. In this first episode, he pulls a bunch of carrots and a bottle of vodka out of a paper bag for his breakfast, and we do see traces of his horse-like love for carrots in the office. Like, he has a statue of a giant carrot there. He juices the carrots with a bottle of pills and a bunch of vodka, another early indicator of his issues with substances. I urge you to go look up what Todd's initial design was if you haven't already seen it. In the words of Lisa Hannawalt herself, he was ugly, and she is not wrong about that. I'm glad they settled on the lovable scamp that he became by final production. Todd tells BoJack that he secretly has a good heart. This is one of the reasons I think that BoJack keeps Todd around. I do think that in his own way, BoJack does care about Todd, and it's revealed he let him stay because he thought Todd was a gay teen who had been kicked out of his home and needed a place to stay, which is, in fact, something that a person with a good heart would do. This is slightly contradicted in the season 5 episode, Mr. Peanut Butter's Booze, but it's also entirely possible that that's a conversation they had off screen. This is also the first time that the short-lived but repeated gag that there are never enough toaster strudels for BoJack begins, as Todd got really high the night before and ate them all. I get it, Todd, we've all been there. Live your truth, man. In the next scene, we have a location change. The establishing shots for these are always an important place to look for animal jokes. For instance, in this one, we transition to the Silver Spoon Diner, and in the outside shot, we see a raccoon dumpster diving, only to find another raccoon who is already in the dumpster and is upset that the new raccoon is barging in on his turf. Inside the diner, we see a pair of dogs, a pink poodle and a corgi that we'll see again, notably in the next episode, BoJack Hates the Troops, and they're recurring background characters. There's also a billboard that can always be visible when they're at the diner, which changes frequently, and in this instance, it's for a random pop star named Angelfish. The pose she's in and the font is a direct reference to a billboard in LA of 80s pop star Angeline, which became quite an LA icon. I did have to look this one up, as I had never seen the billboard before, but the BoJack Horseman subreddit delivered on this, and comparing the two billboards, they are 100% correct. For the main story, this is the first time we meet Pinky Penguin. I'm sorry. I don't know if y'all know how Benedict Cumberbatch pronounces penguin. It's pangwangs. So I think about that all the time and it's ruined my ability to say it. This is the first time we meet Pinky Penguin, voiced by Patton Oswalt. I think that Pinky was supposed to be a much bigger character than he ended up being based on the pitch treatment, but I'm still happy for the role he had. Poor Pinky is already struggling quite a bit, unable to even afford his meal, and awkwardly suggesting BoJack pay, which, yeah, same Pinky, the man has a ton of money and he made you a promise that he's clearly not keeping. Throughout the series, we'll see Pinky devolve into madness through the loss of money at his company, Penguin Publishing, the name of which is another fantastic joke. Although Pinky is by no means the first person that BoJack's let down in his life, he is the first person that we actively see BoJack letting down on screen, which I think is an important setup for BoJack's character as a flaky person. I'm ADHD, and while I do have a tendency to project my ADHD onto characters that I like, I truly do think that BoJack has it. Many people also believe that he has BPD, which I wholeheartedly agree with, but I can't speak as accurately on it since it's a disorder that I don't have. However, after some research with Attitude magazine, which I highly recommend for anyone who's ADHD or has someone ADHD in their lives, I found an article discussing the similarities between the two and the high comorbidity for someone with BPD to also have ADHD. His struggle to write chapter one and time blindness, his distrust of working with a ghostwriter because of wanting to do things and succeed on his own. He also forgets completely about it until Pinky calls a week later to remind him. Out of sight, out of mind, which is something that I personally experience all the time with my own ADHD, although this could also be attributed to his serious substance abuse. He has clear executive dysfunction issues and falls down a rabbit hole of his own thoughts easily, many of which seem to jump around at the speed of light. I believe that some, although obviously not all, of BoJack's substance issues are an attempt to self-medicate, because especially if we consider his family, his presentation, which I believe to be inattentive or combined, and the time in which he grew up, the chances of him getting a diagnosis were slim to none. He is very rejection sensitive, and we have to remember that ADHD presents differently in adults than it does in children, and as an adult with ADHD, I see quite a lot of myself in him. This absolutely won't be the only time I talk about this, and as it is a bit of a hyperfixation for me, I'll likely mention it in just about every episode as I explore examples of why I think this is the case. Another thing to consider is that Raphael Bob Waksberg is ADHD, and although he's never made any mention of it with regards to the show, I do think that as an ADHD writer myself, it's sometimes tough not to ingrain some of those behaviors into your main characters, especially those who suffer from mental illness, because your life and the way you experience the world is just so deeply tied in with your neurodivergence, which, and this is a different conversation, is why I personally prefer to say I am ADHD to I have ADHD. It is a part of me to my very core. I would not be the person I am today without it. I have never known life without it, and I never will. But don't just say that to any ADHDer, because obviously you should listen if they say they prefer to use person-first language, to borrow a term from the autistic community. This article from Attitude, which, by the way, is spelled like ADD-itude, is particular to women with ADHD and BPD, but several of its points stand for men too, I think. There's so much overlap in symptomology, and it says, quote, "The experience of women with ADHD, BPD, or both is characterized by difficulties in self-regulation, feelings, behavior, relationships, and sense of self are chronically unstable. They are challenged by impulsivity and emotional volatility, especially in managing anger. In both disorders, impulsivity can lead to gambling, financial troubles, eating disorders, substance abuse, and unsafe sex. Both groups are hypersensitive to sensory changes. With either or both disorders, the battle to self-regulate leads women to feel ashamed, unsupported, and alone, struggling with anxiety, depression, rage, panic, and despair. In some cases, the more dramatic BPD symptoms can camouflage the more classic ADHD symptoms," end quote. Does that not fit BoJack to a T? It also goes on to illustrate some differences between the two. Quote, "The core symptoms of ADHD, such as persistent inattention, distractibility, and hyperactivity, are not among the criteria for BPD. Stress-related dissociative symptoms and paranoid thoughts that may occur in BPD are not ADHD symptoms. While women with either disorder may experience despair, women with ADHD are more likely to be responding to the shame and demoralization they feel about the choices they've made. Women with BPD are more likely to feel hopeless and frantic in response to the perceived losses in relationships," end quote. This is why I think he actually has both. I think all of these things are true of BoJack. The article also says that in those with histories of early trauma, like BoJack, co-occurrence results in greater impulsivity and emotional dysregulation. They also mention that it can exacerbate ADHD symptoms and increase risk in developing BPD as well. And don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely not saying that he has ADHD and not BPD. I'm saying that I think it's actually very likely he has both, but I'm not entirely sure how comfortable I am speaking on the BPD part, since I am neither a clinician nor do I have BPD. I do think that Raphael Bob Waksberg and the team intentionally did not give him a formal diagnosis. I think that he needed to remain relatable to anyone who suffers from mental illness and not be pigeonholed into one disorder or another. But as an ADHD person, I am more likely to look for those signs. This is why I believe this. And I do believe that he has BPD as well, considering all the trauma and some of his reactions. And I hear that a lot of you who have BPD think this as well and project that as well. And I think that's okay. I think it's important that we do that because that's the way we relate to him. We cut to BoJack's office, which is where his Hockney painting is hanging. Or I assume it's a Hockney. Maybe it's a Hockney, like H-A-W-K-N-E-Y, like a hawk. Did you get it? Did you get the joke? I know Hockney was ostensibly a horse in this universe since it's a self-portrait, but I myself was an art history major, so let's have a quick little art history lesson. This will absolutely not be the last time that I talk about art in BoJack Horseman or even this painting, because it is an incredibly important and recurring theme. In 1972, David Hockney painted Portrait of an Artist, Pool with Two Figures, which has famously become one of the highest-selling artworks ever at auction by Christie's, for over $90 million. BoJack does mention how expensive the painting was, but his comment predates the sale by about 4 years. As of 2021, it still holds the world record for the largest amount of money ever paid for a work by a still-living artist at auction. The Cydonia Gallery in Dallas did a wonderful article on this piece as it relates to BoJack Horseman, and one of my favorite websites, Hyperallergic, did one on art in BoJack in general, as did Sartle, forgive my pronunciation, I've only ever seen it written, both of which I'll be referencing a lot in this podcast. Water in art has so many meanings. Life, death, energy, like, so many meanings. In the 60s and 70s, there was a rise in art with swimming pools, and they have a different energy. They're not natural. They're eerily still, and they're a sign of wealth. They're the uncanny valley of water in art. In the Cydonia Gallery piece, they say, quote, "This sort of swimming pool evokes feelings of contemplation and a hyper-awareness of isolation, as in Mike Nichols' 1967 classic movie The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman," end quote. They go on to talk about the parallel between that and Portrait of an Artist, as well as BoJack's version, to the, quote, "weight of such isolation and loneliness being crushing despite the conveniences, beauty, and luxuries afforded to these protagonists," end quote. It reminds me of one of my favorite essays. I've read this a million times, and I'm sorry, but this excerpt is going to be quite long because I just think it's so beautiful that I couldn't figure out what to cut. This is from Roland Barthes' 1957 Plastic, from Mythologies, in which he says, referencing all the things that plastic can become, quote, "The quick change artistry of plastic is absolute. It can become buckets as well as jewels. Hence a perpetual amazement, the reverie of man at the sight of the proliferating forms of matter, and the connections he detects between the singular of the origin and the plural of the effects. And his amazement is a pleasurable one, since the scope of the transformations gives man the measure of his power, and since the very itinerary of plastic gives him the euphoria of prestigious freewheeling through nature. But the price to be paid for this success is that plastic, sublimated as movement, hardly exists as substance. Its reality is a negative one. Neither hard nor deep, it must be content with a substantial attribute which is neutral in spite of its utilitarian advantages. Resistance, a state which merely means an absence of yielding. In the hierarchy of the major poetic substances, it figures as a disgraced material, lost between the effusiveness of rubber and the flat hardness of metal. It embodies none of the genuine produce of the mineral world, foam, fibers, strata. It is a shaped substance. Whatever its final state, plastic keeps a flocculent appearance, something opaque, creamy, and curdled, something powerless ever to achieve the triumphant smoothness of nature. But what best reveals it for what it is the sound it gives, at once hollow and flat. Its noise is its undoing, as are its colors, for it seems capable of retaining only the most chemical-looking ones. Of yellow, red, and green, it keeps only the aggressive quality, and uses them as mere names, being able to display only concepts of color." End quote. I think that this is pertinent to BoJack. He gains power when he can step outside himself and transform into a character, but his success lacks substance. He has a sort of imposter syndrome, a sort of inorganic flatness to him. Not in terms of how his character is written, but to him as a person. And he feels like he doesn't fit in with the rest of the world, filling his life with meaningless luxuries and material goods to try and fill a void that he constantly searches to close. He's lost his genuineness, and much like plastic, his true self can be revealed at any time behind his carefully molded facade. His quote-unquote colors are a carefully crafted wall of cynicism and aggression that he's built up to protect his real ones, his emotions and presentations to the world so often fake, so often acted and overacted to protect his vulnerability. Not to mention the fact that his identity has become so intrinsically tied to that of the horse, to the point that I think he barely knows who he is without the mask of a character anymore. The horse is a sparkling rhinestone, and BoJack isn't a jewel masked as a rhinestone, but rather the plastic the rhinestone is molded from. Or he feels this way, at least. This is the crux of Portrait of an Artist, Pool with Two Figures 2. A profound feeling of loneliness in the world because authenticity seems to have fallen away in the hills of Hollywood, a yearning for a true place in the world and an understanding of one's true self, a feeling of emptiness and being unreal and isolation despite having people around you. The painting is a reflection of such, and I think that it sends a powerful message of BoJack's self-awareness of the way that he floats through life. The pool is also introduced in the intro of the show and becomes a central point in BoJack's life. It can be a place for leisure or a place of terror, drowning in the weight of the choices he's made. So you may have forgotten that we're actually going through an episode, and quite frankly, I may have too. I do tend to get a little bit sidetracked talking about art, but back to the episode. We're back at the diner, still pretty early on, and we see the cow, who's a waitress. She's a recurring character that will come back several times. BoJack performs a microaggression against Pinky by telling him that his pages will, quote, knock his ass back to the South Pole, end quote, to which Pinky replies that he's from Cincinnati, which, again, opens up a lot of questions that I have about animal racism. Speciesism? In this series. But I do know that it's all primarily jokes and that we shouldn't look too deeply into it. That doesn't stop me from having several questions about it, though. We return to BoJack's couch, where he is once again watching old episodes of Horsin' Around and laughing at his own jokes, which aren't even his own jokes, just his delivery of the jokes. When Todd asks him how many times he's watched the episode, we have the first instance in the series of BoJack over-explaining the joke. Do you get it, though? He says. Nay means no, but it's also a thing that horses say. When Todd doesn't laugh, he says that Todd doesn't get it. BoJack regularly does this when he tells a joke, to the point that he even did it in his stand-up routine, which obviously doesn't work well. I think a part of that is how rejection-sensitive he is. He's desperate for approval. Additionally, when he was a child, the only time he seemingly had any worth in his mother's eyes was when he could be entertaining, even though that was dancing and not telling jokes. I think that when his jokes are rejected, it hits him harder than most as he jumps straight to feelings of worthlessness. This is when we first hear the iconic Horsin' Around theme song. I don't know about y'all, but Three Little Orphans, 1, 2, 3, get stuck in my head constantly. It's a bop. The door to the horse's house is a stable door, and personally I think that it's a reference to Mr. Ed, who is arguably the most famous talking horse, but that's just what it sparks in me. In fact, Raphael Bob Waksberg, in talking about how the concept of the animal-human world was made and how he explained it to people, first references Roger Rabbit and then says, oh, this horse was on this TV show. Oh, I get it. It's like Mr. Ed and BoJack is the horse. Why is the horse just called the horse and not given a name? Because it sounds even funnier when people ask, aren't you the horse from Horsin' Around, since people never remember the names of the actors, but of the beloved characters they play, thus stripping an actor of their individual identity in favor of a fictional character? Because of the song, A Horse with No Name? A reference to Bob Waksberg's Mr. Ed explanation? I think it's all of these things, and also a joke about the interchangeability of so many of these sitcoms of the era. Side note, I love Michelle Branch, but I'll never forgive them for not picking the America version for the soundtrack, even though I know it doesn't fit as well, just because I love the band America so much. One thing BoJack says here that I think about a lot, like way too much, is that when Todd asks if he's drunk, he replies that he weighs over 1,200 pounds and that it takes a lot to get him drunk before cutting to dozens of beer bottles strewn across the floor. I know logically that this is just a throwaway joke, that it shouldn't be taken too seriously, but I still can't help it. I think about it so much. Like, when he sleeps with Wanda, a bird who presumably has bird bones since we see that she can fly, if the logic that each animal weighs something similar to its real-life counterpart, this is something that has haunted me for years, even if I know it's a joke. Every time I see him on top of someone or see someone having to drag his passed-out body somewhere, I just can't stop thinking about the fact that he allegedly weighs over 1,200 pounds. Now we flash back to the previous night and get to seeing my favorite character on screen for the first time, other than in the opening credits. Princess motherfucking Carolyn. She's voiced by the absolutely hilarious Amy Sedaris, who I believe deserves several awards for her ability to deliver the tongue twister she so often has. In fact, let me try to say one from Hooray Todd episode right now. Seriously, one take, no editing, scout's honor. Here we go. PC, you are just the guy I need. You know the actress Courtney Portnoy? Todd, I think so. She portrayed the formerly portly consort in the Seaport Resort? PC, courtly roles like the formerly portly consort are Courtney Portnoy's forte, but she's got a new action movie that's supposed to change her image. Ms. Taken. You know Mr. Taken from the Taken movies? This is his niece. Todd. Nice. PC. This was supposed to be Courtney's crossover coronation, but that's sort of been thwarted, unfortunately, because Courtney's purportedly falling short of shoring up four quadrant support. Todd. Makes perfect sense so far. Oh my god. Jesus Christ, I don't know how I did that. That was pure magic right there that allowed that to happen. Gosh, I don't know how Amy Sedaris does it so frequently. That was really hard. The two meet at Elefante, which is apparently the place to be in Hollywood, since it's the only restaurant other than the diner that the characters ever really go to. We also see Lenny Turtletaub for the first time outside the credits. Todd said in the previous scene that BoJack was upset that PC dumped him, which BoJack is very flippant about, but I do think there's some truth to that. I think Todd knows BoJack better than BoJack realizes he does. Princess Carolyn is embarrassed that BoJack is making fun of Lenny Turtletaub, who is very important in PC's side of the industry, which is another indication of BoJack's self-centeredness. He's so used to having other people fix things for him, and Princess Carolyn is the one who would have to, so he doesn't feel uncomfortable saying terrible things out loud, but she does. We have one of the first glimpses of the unhealthy relationship BoJack has with food as he eats 9 baskets of bread, which we'll explore more as we reach the episodes about Beatrice and Honey, but are clearly a direct result of the generational trauma surrounding food and fatness in his home. Princess Carolyn tells him that they should see other people, which his immediate reaction to is saying, "Were we not seeing other people?" I think that BoJack is the type of person who would sleep with others while in a relationship with someone, but be jealous if that person was sleeping with other people too. We also see BoJack's odd autoeroticism when he's sleeping with Emily Mortimer and comes as he watches himself deliver a rather milquetoast joke on Horsin' Around. We also see sitting behind BoJack a dog that I believe is the corgi always seen with the pink poodle, as their sweaters are similar, although we never see her face. This, rightfully, upsets Princess Carolyn. She brings up the fact that she is upset that he doesn't respect her enough to have a baby with her. Her deep desire for children will be a reoccurring theme in the series. We can safely assume that at this point she's already had 3 miscarriages prior to the start of the series, so it's unsurprising that this is an issue that affects her so deeply. Cut to the outside of Lululemon, which I think is a joke both because it sounds like Lululemon and because Lululemon has such a, enthusiastic group of followers. BoJack knocks over a baby stroller and steals a car to get away from PC saying the baby is cute. Hilariously, the mother of the baby does not seem to care that her baby is on the ground and is instead entranced by the scene before her. And BoJack says that he was running away from his girlfriend because he doesn't respect her enough to have a baby with her, which is when we get our first, "Aren't you the horse from Horsin' Around?" Back at Elefante, he explains that he's not afraid of commitment, but of following through on commitments. As an ADHDer, I found this to be such an attack. It was just incredibly relatable. And then we see Mr. Peanut Butter for the first time.
He's signing an autograph for a woman at the entrance who's wearing a green dress, and we'll see her in a couple of other episodes asking for autographs. And then he comes over to join them, much to Bojack's chagrin, as Bojack tries to explain that they're breaking up and Mr. Peanut Butter's presence makes it awkward. We get our first, what is this, a crossover episode? Mr. Peanut Butter is, at first glance, the antithesis to Bojack. Sunny, goofy, optimistic, and positive to a fault. But as time goes by, we learn that he's just as flawed and toxic as everyone else around him. Bob Waxberg says that when he was explaining the character to the amazing Paul F. Tompkins, he wanted to be very clear that Peanut Butter may seem shallow and superficial, but isn't. He's genuinely interested, but has a short attention span and, in his words, a low IQ, although he does have some decent emotional intelligence. He says that he's often a dummy, but also enjoys playing the dummy, like we see in this scene. Many of his comedic lines are purposefully ambiguous, so we're never entirely sure if he knows exactly what's going on in any given moment. He sits down and says, "Always a Clydesdale, never a Clyde, eh, Bojack? You'll get that one later, man." This is a line that baffles Bojack, and honestly, me too. I would think that it's probably about the torch that Bojack carries for Diane, foreshadowing that Peanut Butter is going to propose, since it's playing off of always a bridesmaid, never a bride. But it also might just be a bit of horse-related nonsense, since at this point there's no way that Mr. Peanut Butter would know anything about Bojack and Diane, because Bojack hasn't met her yet. And then we get our very first mention of my queen, Erica. "Erica, get out of here with that face," Mr. Peanut Butter says. Princess Carolyn is upset that Bojack refuses to be civil and polite, and that she's wasted so much time on him, and says that she doesn't know how he can expect anyone else to love him when he so clearly hates himself. I think this is very powerful. Elefante is always an excellent place to see animal gags outside. The joke here is playing off the trope of someone yelling so loudly that it scares the birds outside, as there are four pigeons, presumably ready to have a business dinner, and when he yells, $10 for bread, they fly away, startled. As Bojack is driving Princess Carolyn back from the restaurant, he's fixated on the bread, on his appearance, whether he's getting chubby. She tells him that the real reason they're breaking up, classic Bojack, is using the bread thing to avoid talking about the relationships. There is an obvious parallel here with Bojack's parents and their avoidance styles, tying back into the deep theme of generational trauma in this series that we'll explore more in later episodes, especially in the fourth season. Bojack denies this, says she thinks he's fat once more, and we cut to the morning that we were originally at, where Todd had just told Bojack he's upset that PC broke up with him. Bojack delivers his first headline of the series, a remnant from Butterscotch. "Dumb guy eats bread, gets fat, the end." When Todd questions this headline, Bojack wonders where the pizza he'd been eating went, only to realize that he had eaten it all and gets upset about this. Todd suggests throwing a party, which will turn into our first Todd shenanigan, and Bojack tells him no, because it will cheer Todd up, not Bojack. Bojack will stand in the corner eating cotton candy until he barfs. I don't think that Bojack actually likes parties as much as he likes partying, which I can relate to personally.
At the last party that he references, we got our second, "Hey, aren't you the horse from Horsin' Around?" of the series, as Bojack gorges himself on cotton candy from a stand called Sticky Pink, which is just an objectively off-putting name for a cotton candy stand, in my opinion. I love the animation for him barfing cotton candy, though, as much as I'm usually disgusted by vomit. Todd reminisces that it was a good party. Bojack asks who told him that he and PC broke up, which Todd reveals was PC herself, as Bojack forgot to actually take her home, and she is still in their apartment. She demands he take her home, to which he replies that he will, but he won't stop to look for parking, and that she'll have to duck and roll. In the car, she tells him he can get one last look, as it's the last time he'll see it, and he opens the door to push her out. PC, being a cat, does an impressive flip through the air and lands on all fours, because, as we know, cats always land on their feet. It's unclear whether Silver Lake, where PC lives, is a predominantly cat neighborhood, since she lands in front of a restaurant called Gato, but we can't see the rest of the sign, so it might say gate or something. In the background, we get our first glimpse of Officer Meow Meow Fuzzy Face talking to a human cop, or at least I believe it's him based on his color pattern. Moments later, as we're back in Bojack's car, Princess Carolyn's assistant Laura, played by Rachel Bloom, by the way, please go watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend if you're into musicals and mental health, Laura calls and tells Bojack she's got PC for him. PC is now in the position of his agent, her personality entirely flipped to being professional, and this is a core facet of PC's identity that we need to explore. Also, she's drinking catnip tea, which I just think is a fun detail. She tells him that, as his agent, she does not think that he's getting fat, which he's still stuck on, but as his ex-girlfriend, she thinks he looks like crap cubed. She schmoozes him and tells him that he needs to provide an update to Penguin on the status of the book, then asks if he'll be too busy masturbating to old pictures of himself, which is the second time we hear about BoJack coming to the idea of his lost fame. He says that it wasn't about the pictures, but about what the pictures represented. Masturbation doesn't just mean the literal act, it's also used to mean self-pleasure, like a masturbatory fantasy in which we indulge ourselves in imagining scenarios in which we are the main character, the stars of the show, the Mary Sues. She does mean it literally here, but I think it's worth it to think about its other meaning in the context of BoJack's dreams for himself. Cut to Penguin Publishing, which appears to only have penguins as employees, and we see a penguin slide on his belly across the floor right before Pinky tells BoJack that he needs to hire a ghostwriter, panicked by BoJack's lackadaisical attitude about the book. One of my personal favorite little jokes here, as a penguin presumably jumps to his death off the top of the building with the company's impending closure, is that we get a Wilhelm scream. Now, this is just a personal quirk about me. I love the Wilhelm scream. I can identify even the tiniest one, and this is a very overt one. If you don't know what it is, let me show you. The Wilhelm scream is a stock sound effect that's been used in, I think, over 150 different movies and countless other TV shows. It started in 1951 with a film called Distant Drums, and most of the time someone is either falling off a building or there's an explosion that threw them backward, and it's very famous. It's named after a character named Private Wilhelm in the 1953 movie The Charge at Feather River, and this is what it sounds like. See, you know what that is. I'll play it for you one more time. Pinky hurriedly tells BoJack that they made a series of bad investments, including a YA series called The Swamp Monsters of Malibu, which is great because swamp monsters are objectively unsexy. Don't come at me, monster fuckers. I respect your right to want to fuck monsters. That's your prerogative. But a swamp monster? Really? The Tums on Pinky's desk are labeled Tub, which is probably just a product displacement situation, but could be a joke that went over my head. BoJack does assert that he's very busy, and it cuts away to him sitting on his couch, eating potato chips, and watching Horsin' Around. In the show, Sabrina calls BoJack Daddy for the first time. BoJack says, and has Todd confirm, that Sabrina grew up before our eyes. Likely a throwaway joke, but when you think too much about it, there's a darker meaning, as Sarah Lynn grew up in the public eye, and BoJack was her only father figure. Other than, of course, her horrible stepfather, who we'll explore more as we meet him. Back to Pinky's office, they're hiring BoJack a ghostwriter. Diane Nugent, BoJack says, the first time we hear her name mispronounced. Funny enough, her email is listed at the bottom of her business card. Nguyen is the loneliest number at AOL.com, which you would think would give some indication as to how Nguyen is pronounced. And I apologize, please excuse my own pronunciation. I watched several videos of Vietnamese people explaining how to pronounce it and practice quite a lot, but my mouth won't quite comply. Pinky assures him that she's great and has a thing for horses as she wrote the Secretariat book. This is the first time that we hear that Secretariat is BoJack's personal hero, and he says that he wanted to play him in a movie and almost got the project off the ground in the 90s, but the movie is about Steve Prefontaine, the American long-distance runner, came out, and people got tired of seeing running on screen since in this universe they're both just runners. He looks at the back of the book. The back of Diane's book is fascinating. I'm going to read it to you. Diane Nguyen was born in Boston. There she attended Boston University and majored in literature and equine studies. In preparation for this book, Diane spent 3 years conducting research and interviews to bring to light the saga of Secretariat. Previous works include The Rise and Fall of Strongheart and the New York Times bestseller Tracing Zippo Pine Bar. Diane currently lives in Los Angeles with a dog. Nuanced, dark, and triumphant, Nguyen's Secretariat A Life lays bare the before hidden struggles and impetus behind Secretariat's record-breaking success, the New York Times. In Secretariat, A Life, Nguyen paints a vivid portrait of one of the greatest thoroughbreds of all time. From interviews with Secretariat's family, managers, and lovers, we see a side of the legend until now left unseen. Never again will you look at Secretariat the same. USA Toadie. The amazing story behind the greatest athlete of the 20th century. Newsbeak. Now, equine studies is a fantastic joke in and of itself. Unfortunately, I'm not entirely sure what the rise and fall of Strongheart is supposed to be. In my research, I found several horses named Strongheart, but none that were particularly famous. So if anyone knows the answer to this, let me know, and I'll tell everyone, with credit to you, in the next episode. Tracing Zippo Pine Bar is about a show horse named Zippo Pine Bar who won several awards in his time and is in the American Quarter Horse Association Hall of Fame. Don't you love horse names? I could and will get stuck down a rabbit hole of them for hours. My personal favorite is Potato, spelled P-O-T-O-O-O-O-O-O-O. But there are a million. If you have a little time to kill, please go Google racehorse names. You will lose your shit. And there's my ADHD. I did get derailed for about 15 minutes just looking at racehorse names before I remembered I was supposed to be writing this podcast. The best part of this is when it says, Diane currently lives in Los Angeles with a dog. The dog, of course, being Mr. Peanut Butter. I cackled when I first realized that particular bit of foreshadowing. Pinky loans Bojack the Secretariat book and says he can take anything he wants from the Swamp Monsters of Malibu swag box, which appears to be some sort of story about California surfer dude swamp monsters. Perhaps the monster enters a surfing competition. Quite frankly, I would be very curious to read this book. The electricity, which Bojack had commented on being back when he arrived, goes off again, a sign that they are in dire need of the book. Back at Bojack's house, Bojack is stressing out about being a failure, and Todd reassures him that he isn't. This is where we lead into our first Todd shenanigan. I wonder if it's a Breaking Bad reference, since Aaron Paul is hot off the tail of that at this point, and it's a known fact that the creators and producers were fans of the show, but it might just be a good joke for Todd. In an email, they praised him for his work in Breaking Bad, and he thanked them, saying that he missed the kid, Jesse Pinkman. Me too, Aaron. He is truly an astoundingly phenomenal actor. He has the range, darling. He flashes back to being tied up in a warehouse with a man and a rhino beating him up for trying to sell E on the cartel's turf. Todd asks where Gabriella is and is told that she went back to Mexico City to be with her husband, which upsets Todd. Back in present day, he is in tears, asking, Gabriella, why? To which Bojack responds, we were talking about me. Can you focus for like a second? Todd dutifully returns his attention to Bojack, and Bojack is still lamenting signing the book deal, and says that he can't say no to people because he wants everyone to like him, much to Todd's surprise. This didn't surprise me at all, with Bojack's need for validation and perceived rejection sensitivity. He genuinely believes this, and is startled by the prospect that some people might not. Todd for 10 minutes, by which time he's forgotten the question, and we get Bojack's second headline since he was laser-focused on it. Stupid Bojack writes a stupid book about his stupid life, comma, nobody cares. Todd asks, what newspapers are you reading? Which makes me laugh every time. Princess Carolyn is still here baking something and suggests that Bojack just let the ghostwriter help, and he asks why she's in his kitchen. They've slept together the night prior, and he says that he doesn't remember due to being drunk, to which her ears flatten and she hisses at him. Bojack assumes that Diane, whom he has never met, thinks he's a dumb sitcom actor, and proclaims that he hates her and her stupid, impossible-to-pronounce last name. He commits another microaggression by saying, Naguya Nagugaguga, which, like, get it together, Bojack. Todd reminds him that they've never met and once again tries to convince Bojack to let him have a party. He flashes back to the warehouse where the rhino is beating him, and they tell him they've lost a lot of money because of him. So much that they can't throw the cartel boss's daughter her quinceañera, and shoots a rabbit man in the warehouse to illustrate what will happen if Todd doesn't deliver the party for her. Bojack is complaining that the book is far too much pressure, which is why he's written nothing. I believe this is decision paralysis from ADHD, as it's something that I've experienced far too many times. He explains that it's his only shot at preserving his legacy. He worries that he's washed up and a joke and lays out his fears that if the book isn't good, then there's no chance of changing that. Then he begins to spiral at the idea of being a washed-up hack, questioning whether that's true, and freaks out that he may be dying. He says he smells burning toast, but PC runs back to the kitchen to rescue the toast she had been making. He begs Todd to tell people to put 1975 as his birth year on his grave, and asks him to respect a dying man's wish when Todd says that nobody would believe that, to which Todd responds, "You're not dying." I did mention this in the last episode of this podcast, but in the next scene, exactly 17 minutes into the episode, it opens on a heart monitor flatlining and BoJack having a sheet pulled over his head in a hospital. The doctor tells the nurse to record the time of death and says that it doesn't get easier. We're apparently at St. Elmer's Medical Center, with Elmer the Bull from Elmer's Glue being the saint. And just as an aside, earlier this year I found out that Elmer the Bull from Elmer's Glue is married to Elsie the Dairy Cow from Borden Dairy Products, and they have four calves together, and they've been married since the 40s, and there used to be comic books about it, and I haven't stopped thinking about it since I first heard it, and I just need y'all to also have that knowledge now. Anyway, the doctor tells Sabrina, Olivia, and Ethan that the horse is dead of a broken heart because the children, or maybe just Sabrina, didn't appreciate him enough, and now he's gone forever. Then we cut to the real BoJack, sitting in a hospital bed with PC reading Birdo magazine and Todd standing beside him. He says that they might have gone too dark on the series finale, and the children are given back to CPS right where they started. Todd asks if BoJack takes the DVDs everywhere he goes, to which BoJack replies that nobody gave Lina shit about his blanket. Horsin' Around is a security blanket for him, since it reminds him of the time in his life when he was in his prime, so to speak. The prime time of his life for his primetime television show. His best memories come from the fame and fortune of that era. And that's what he's known for, so of course he would have an unhealthy attachment to it. BoJack is startled that PC has other clients and immediately becomes jealous, asking if they're better than he is. She doesn't respond, intentionally making BoJack think that yes, they are. This is part of why I think he would be very jealous if he had found out that she was sleeping with other people during their relationship. The pig doctor comes in and informs BoJack that he had a mild anxiety attack, and BoJack makes a joke that nobody laughs at. I personally thought it was kind of funny. He is instructed to take it easy, which PC is slightly outraged by, wondering aloud how much easier he could take it. BoJack is visibly thrilled with these instructions. PC urges him to call Diane, as the book deal is so clearly stressing him out. He has a very relatable moment where he says, "What? You want me to call this woman? On the phone?" and proceeds to have a second anxiety attack. Same, dude. I have an anxiety attack pretty much any time I have to pick up a phone. 10 minutes later, he makes another joke that nobody laughs at, and the doctor says he has other patients, to which BoJack replies, "You have other patients?" Todd once again suggests a party, promising that he'll take care of everything, and says that Diane could come so that they could meet in a casual setting. BoJack finally relents, much to Todd's relief, with the condition that they don't get another cotton candy machine, and Todd says he'll do his best. Cut to the party at BoJack's house, where there is mariachi music and three mariachis, two of which are frogs and one of which is a human who looks like a frog. Children play pin the tail on the donkey, and one child walks toward an actual donkey with the pin held out. BoJack is very confused as to who Todd invited, but doesn't seem to be complaining too much as he chows down on cotton candy. The cartel boss tells BoJack that he has made a powerful ally for life with his generosity. BoJack asks if it's a quinceañera, and Todd doesn't outright deny it, making BoJack feel as though he was being presumptuous. Cut to a girl in a quinceañera dress hitting a piñata, a large banner over her head that reads, "It's your quinceañera, Christina!" Banners are important to pay attention to in this show, particularly peanut butters, as they're often hilarious. Personally, I hope that this is a reference to Arrested Development, since I do know that Raphael Bob Waksberg is a fan, although it's also just a common trope, so it's not necessarily a reference. I just like to think it is. Look at Banner, Michael! BoJack finds the piñata offensive, which brings up more questions about race in this universe that I can't answer, although I would suppose that were I in this universe, I'd also find a piñata of my species offensive. In The Art Before the Horse, Chris McDonald writes, quote, "Despite being conscious creators and populating the BoJack world with a diverse variety of human people in an attempt to reflect the real world, the crew has to be careful not to carry human-specific signifiers of ethnicity or religion over to animal characters, for fear of audiences trying to spot ostensibly intentional correlations and inevitably taking offense," end quote. Raphael Bob Waksberg says that, quote, "Some people were even kind of angry because they wanted it to be more specific, but it wasn't. That kind of specificity is something that we really stepped aside from. We'll have a joke every once in a while in which an animal gets offended by, like, an animal joke that feels racist in that way, but we really try not to go too deeply into that, end quote. Mike Hollingsworth, the supervising director, continues, quote, ultimately, what's great is that throughout the history of animation and the history of storytelling, animals can serve as placeholders for people, but in a way that allows us to shed all of the different societal hang-ups. You have all these animals in these stories, but they're not from a place. They're just from the earth. They're just animals, end quote. We see several cartel members walking around, and the tattoos on their bodies are just basic words and phrases in Spanish, like, me gusta, hablo español, other things like that. Todd excuses himself, and BoJack sees Diane for the first time. Before he can go talk to her, Mr. Peanut Butter catches his attention and says, can you believe this? The two of us in the same house? What is this, a crossover episode? Marking the second crossover episode of the series. Mr. Peanut Butter asks how BoJack is and immediately steamrolls over his answer, saying that they'll catch up later upon seeing, you guessed it, Erica. Erica, he says, how are you looking so beautiful? I'm furious. It's our second Erica sighting. I find it fascinating that Erica is invited to all of these parties, and I wonder if Mr. Peanut Butter invites her or if she's really just in with so many crowds that BoJack runs around. She doesn't seem to be a celebrity. Who is she? These are questions that I never really want answered, but I will speculate on for the rest of my time on this earth. You'll find me in the nursing home in 2080 just going on and on about Erica, and it'll baffle the staff. I can't wait. Just as an aside, I was writing some of my notes while imbibing, and a note that I've written here that I would just love to comprehend is, the show is actually about Erica, don't at me. What does drunk cat know that sober cat doesn't? Her mind. BoJack leans over the railing of his balcony, looking out at the skyline, when Diane approaches him to introduce herself. He says he doesn't want to mispronounce her name, to which she replies, Diane. I love that even early on, even when she's so nervous, we get a glimpse into Diane's dry sense of humor that so often aligns with BoJack's as she's ribbing him, and knows full well he wants her to say Nguyen. He attempts to play it off, and she explains that she gets awkward at parties, then proceeds to be very awkward and existential. She's super relatable, too. He suggests alcohol and tries to keep up with her overthinking and oversharing. She says he has a lovely home, and he says sadly, if you're going to throw away most of your adult life on some dumb sitcom, you might as well get a sweet house out of the deal, right? Creating his own awkward moment. Raphael Bob Waxberg had a lot of thoughts about the house, and I think that it was executed beautifully, a true picture of nouveau riche. Diane asks what BoJack's working on, which he says that he's mostly sitting around the house and complaining, which, same dude. She asks how that's working for him, and he says he can't complain. Sometimes even the simplest jokes can be the funniest. Mr. Peanut Butter can be heard making an uncomfortable joke about having sex with a girl and says that he's just kidding around, which I think alludes to the idea that he's not such a perfect good boy after all, and BoJack asks with disgust in his voice if Diane knows who he is. He explains that he was on Mr. Peanut Butter's House, a show about a dog who adopts three human kids, Zoe, Zelda, and Zachary. He says it's a dumb idea for a TV show. Mr. Peanut Butter goes to sign autographs. He's so stupid he doesn't know how miserable he should be. I envy that, BoJack says. This is very relatable to me. I think it ties back into the ADHD and BPD thing. This is a thought I've had countless times in my life, despite knowing that it's not a great thought to have. Diane tells him the story of the dad from the Brady Bunch, classically trained actor Robert Reed, to which he says, the story is profoundly sad, and then makes a gay joke, and then says, I'm better than that. And she tells him that most people don't even get the Brady Bunch version of their dreams, so he's responsible for his own happiness. He says that that's depressing. I agree. I find it very relatable that he says this. BoJack goes on to say, I'm responsible for my own happiness. I can't even be responsible for my own breakfast. This is another thing I find very relatable. We cut to him eating wheat lumps for breakfast, spilling the whole box into the bowl, and yelling for help from Todd. To me, this is another indication of severe executive dysfunction. It's something that I struggle with and have my whole life. Then we go back to the party. What would make you happy? Diane asks. BoJack replies, finishing my memoir, I guess. Diane lights up and says that she can help with that. Bojack then makes the self-deprecating but very important statement, "You'd probably get sick of me." And she says, "I don't think that's going to happen." This is something that carries so much more weight during a rewatch if you have the final events of Nice While It Lasted in mind. My brain practically starts playing Mr. Blue right there. There is an ominous sense of foreshadowing there, but of course on our first watches, we're all still optimists about the two, right? Or at least I was. At her reassurance, he agrees to hire her. He asks her not to put all the stuff about how sad he is in the book, ogles a woman walking by, and then says that she's his ghostwriter, starting now. Mr. Peanut Butter calls his name, much to Bojack's chagrin, and comes to talk to them. PB reveals that Diane Nguyen is his girlfriend, which Bojack is confused and upset by, after being confused and upset that PB drank all his beer. They confirm that they have sex, which begs more questions about this universe that I personally can't think too hard about. Bojack proceeds to vomit quite a bit of cotton candy over the side of the balcony onto Felicity Huffman's house, which will come back to haunt him in Stupid Piece of Shit, and we're played out into the credits. Now, let's talk about the absolute masterpiece by Group Love, who, by the way, have a fantastic discography even outside of Tongue Tied, which is obviously brilliant. I can't legally add the music, but let's all take a moment to sing together. I know it's cheesy, but don't worry, I won't judge you. I can't carry a tune in a bucket. But come on, let's do it anyway. We'll sing in whatever key my voice won't break in. You ready? 1, 2, 3, 4. Back in the 90s, I was in a very famous TV show. Do-new-new, I'm Bojack the Horse.
Bojack.
Bojack the Horse, don't act like you don't know. Do-new-new, and I'm trying to hold on to my past. It's been so long, I don't think I'm gonna last. I guess I'll just try and make you understand that I'm more horse than a man. Or I'm more man than a horse.
Bojack!
Did you do it? I really hope you did it. If you didn't do it, I get it. But also, are you sure you don't want to? It was pretty fun. You can still rewind. There's time. Come on, just do it. I'd like to thank my sponsor, Anchor, once more before we say goodbye. All right, if you made it through all that, that was really nice of you. Thank you. I'm so glad you were here with me to listen to me talk about the depressed talking horse for over an hour. Unfortunately, I do have to say that despite my original projection to get one of these out every Friday, the project has sort of gotten away from me. This episode alone sits at around 13,000 words, and this is a passion project, not a full-time job, so I may need a little extra time to deliver the quality I hope this lived up to. Can you believe I originally planned to make each episode 17 minutes long? Who was I kidding? I'm an ADHD nightmare. I should know better. But I do think this is better, personally. Since it's the first episode, I don't really have any pertinent questions to address, but please feel free to drop any episode-specific questions or questions about what I've said in this podcast on my TikTok or Twitter, both KerseyCat. That's KeirseyCat. Once again, my name is Kat, and I'll see you next time, where we'll be discussing Season 1, Episode 2, Bojack Hates the Troops. Bye!